Welcome to the Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President CEO of the Wine Growers, here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine. And I can't focus because Carissa's having
a mess over here.
Microphone issue. I don't know. It's moving around on you.
The microphone was moving around, and so then I had to lower my chair, which was a whole nother experience. So, but here I am.
Here you are, and I can hear you.
Perfectly poised.
Exactly. Such a professional.
Right?
Ready to go.
Let's do it.
Despite the circumstances.
Exactly. Oh my gosh.
All right, so.
And I saw your little dance moves over there. I don't think those were missed, even in my chaos over here.
I mean, I love that song. I hear it every time, every show, and I still love it.
Because you remember when we actually had to pick out a song and we were listening to.
We listened to a lot.
So many songs.
Could have gone a lot of different directions. Yes.
And, you know, literally, how many episodes? We're like 100 episodes in?
I think we're on 102.
Holy cow.
Officially.
Episode 102. And so thank God we like the song. Because if we didn't, that would have been a lot of bad music playing before every show.
But maybe we should switch it up. I don't know.
No. Jeff, our producer, is like, no.
It's good times.
You're stuck forever.
We love it.
Well, speaking of good times, you recently wrote one of your Good Stuff columns for us. It was called Grab a Glass, See a Show.
I did.
That was kind of punchy a little bit. I don't know. I felt like you were kind of making a statement. It was a little aggressively ordering people out. I felt like.
I don't think there was any aggression in that. It's like, okay, it was a reaction to a story that I referenced. I think that was in the Washington Post.
Yeah.
About just... Nobody goes out anymore. Everybody just sits in their house and stares at their phone.
So you quoted the Washington Post. Americans now spend an average of 99 more minutes at home each day than they did in 2003. And while this generation of 15 to 24-year-olds spends 124 more minutes at home than their counterparts 2 decades ago.
Yeah. I mean, except for producer Jeff.
Yeah, he's out a lot.
Yeah, he's out a lot. He's helping.
But there's a lot of, there's a lot of reasons for that. I mean, I think a lot of screen time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have modern conveniences that make it easier to be home.
Yes.
You don't have to go someplace for your entertainment or whatever. But my point was there's so many things that go on in Sonoma County, and a lot of them involve wine or other beverages, and like, go. Just get out.
No,
get out
like
of your
that.
House once in a while.
No, and you made a nice recommendation of so many different things that folks could sort of do in and around Sonoma County. And I think that's kind of fun. We should maybe just kind of keep that list going on our website.
I mean, it was a running tally. To just show the range of things, I mean, there was an ABBA tribute and a Queen tribute on the same weekend right here in
Sonoma County. I know.
Yeah.
And
I bet your options are wide.
And you could probably get wine at both of those.
I would think so. Yes. Yeah. In many cases, some of the local wineries are sponsors of these event centers and help keep culture alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Anyway, it was just kind of fun, like, what's going on?
No, I think that is important to recognize. I mean, we say how much wine plays a role just in community conversation at a table with friends, family, and in its rightful place, so to speak. And so it'll be great to have people sharing more of that.
Okay, well, we're going to share some more when we come back on The Good Stuff. We are here on The Good Stuff in studio with our guest today, Matt Taylor, winemaker at Mascarin Family Wines. And am I saying that right? Mascarin?
You are.
All right. Well, thank you so much for
We're
coming.
We're off to a good start.
I know.
All right.
I know. It's like, let's get the basics out of the
one
way.
For
like,
one.
Did I mess up the name already? No, Matt, welcome.
Thank you.
So good to see you.
You as well. It's been a while.
I know. It's been way too long. So, I mean, where to begin?
The beginning.
Chris always wants the beginning. Okay. So I didn't realize, I mean, I've known you for many years, but I didn't realize that you were multi-generation Sonoma County native. So tell me about that. Like, tell us about your family.
So on my mother's side, my grandfather, mother's family, if you might have heard of a little place, the Tides Wharf in Bodega Bay.
Okay.
It was in the 20s. They were actually going up and down. My great-grandparents were going up and down the coastline and stumbled into what was a little eatery if you will, bar, and the owner was on tough times or whatever. I think they purchased that little spot there for around $50.
Oh my God.
And in the 20s. And then my grandpa's brother and their family were running the restaurant there. And then my grandpa and them had a big club in LA, came up to take it over, and made in the future the Tides Wharf. They wound up mm-hmm. negotiating with Hitchcock on The Birds, and they had to name town Bodega Bay. They had to name the lead character after my grandpa. He was an amazing negotiator, and then he also got himself a speaking role in the movie.
No way!
That's
so
awesome.
A multi-generational out there with the Tides Wharf, and so I grew up Bodega Bay, Sebastopol, and then my dad's family came up here in the 40s and moved in, and then my dad and his family were raised out in Sebastopol in the hills out there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a lot within a short amount of time. Like, I mean, Alfred Hitchcock, The Birds, was he one of the people running away from The Birds in Bodega?
No, so that was actually in the town of Bodega, but the he owned the restaurant, the hotel, the gas station, so all of that out there. And then basically the first scene when Tippi Hedren comes across the water and her first attack, he's the fisherman on the dock when they come off water.
Yeah, so. I feel like I need to, I'm going to go
I know,
and rewatch
I need
it
to,
like,
I was
immediately.
Gonna say. Yeah, you like summed all that up in like 2 minutes. That's
perfect.
Like a very long, though. Like,
there's a lot of questions too in there. Like,
well, this is a Bodega Bay podcast. We can go on that.
That's
one.
That's totally fine. I mean, the Sonoma Coast podcast for sure. Like, so what were they doing? Yeah. I mean, so they're like sailing along the coast, but where did they start?
Well, my mother's father, their family was from an island between Italy and Yugoslavia. And so they came over here early 1900s and were basically, I don't know what they were doing up in that area, but they just happened to stumble into that spot and said, why don't we put some roots here and buy this little place? And it was multifaceted in how the Tides Wharf and Hall, all of that got developed over time.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, for me, it was growing up and basically being dropped off at the restaurant and the dock while my mom was working restaurant and gift shop.
Yeah.
And I was just out there on the, whatever it was, on the old video game machines or on the dock playing with seagulls with the fishermen, whatever it was. And multi-generational spear fishing, diving out on the coast. It's it's a long seafaring family out there.
Yeah, sounds like it. So was that sort of your introduction into, I mean, obviously restaurant world, but did you start to have an interest in kind of food culture, or were your parents selling wine? Like, was there, or there's nothing to do with that at that
no,
point?
I mean, on my grandfather's side, my parents didn't drink a drop of alcohol, and so there was never anything around on that end, nothing to be inspired with wine.
Mm-hmm.
Food-wise, yes, a little bit. I mean, I got into it on my own young, and then I'd say that wine came later, obviously through friends that had wineries and whose parents did serve wine and alcohol around the table. There was a lot to be inspired by there.
And so was that, because you said you grew up part of the time in Sebastopol, so were you at Annalee or El Molino?
To not offend all my friends from Sebastopol, I went to Cardinal Newman.
Okay, well, that's all right. Producer Jeff is
so
happy
neither
about
one,
that.
No Annalee, no El Molino.
You went to school locally, though.
All my other schools were Sebastopol. So we were Sebastopol-based, but all the work for my mom's side was out in Bodega Bay, so I was out there weekly.
Okay, so you get exposed to other families that have vineyards, have wineries. Yeah. You start maybe tasting wine. What's the trajectory?
It was lucky. So the Bilbro family, Jake Bilbro, Sam, Scott, Chris Bilbro owned Marietta Cellars, and so Old Vine Red and that side of things. And Jake was one of my best friends, and we were always going out with Chris, be it mushroom hunting, diving, or pig hunting, whatever it was at the time. And we were coming back and Chris was having us break it all down and make a meal, an old Italian meal at the end of the day. And he was putting wine on the table. And for a young kid, 14 years old, whose family has nothing to do with alcohol or any of that side of things, even meals cooked in that way, I was at a very young age, knew I just wanted to be Chris. And yeah. So I remember it was a sophomore year with a friend of mine late night, and he said, you know, what are we going to do when we get? I said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what Chris does. And so it wasn't about wine at that point. It was about lifestyle and what Chris was, and it turned into a much deeper passion for wine as time went on.
I never had the chance to meet Chris, unfortunately, but like he's spoken of so highly, specifically by his sons, but it's nice to hear like just the impact he had on so many of the next generation. But you know, to your point about like just the mushroom hunting and the pig hunt, you know, all the sort of foraging that he did, he was really good at finding vineyards. No,
yeah, he was, and he also, I mean, there was a
nice
side
tie.
Of Chris which I think that you know, in the modern winemaking vein, which you know took over so much of California wine industry, Chris predated that, and Chris was very much a person until, gosh, it was much later with his kids that he even started to think about using chemistry in the winery, and everything was taste and everything was feel. And so that was very much my introduction to winemaking and what it was before I got into, you know, I pursued the modern winemaking path for a while as well, escaped it, you know, narrowly, thank you. But that side of Chris was very much a passion filled, and just, again, he did everything based upon how he felt with those properties and those wines, and it was very romantic for sure, and very inspirational.
And those wines are still so great, and Scott's kind of continuing that tradition, which is nice to see.
Very much.
So was that, you know, did that sort of guide you into pursuing winemaking, or did that still take a little bit of time?
No, for sure. Well, what I would say is that I was 100% sold on that path. I pursued sports for a narrow window because I had an opportunity. I went to University of Washington and played football, and I thought I was going to go somewhere else with sports, and then injured myself, and then very quickly got back into wine. And that happened. I actually went to live with a relative side and some side of schooling in southern Spain, in Andalusia, in Cádiz, and I worked in Jerez. And I was able to jump into wine in Jerez as the first kind of gig for a couple years. And you'll notice a lot of themes come up on oxidative side of winemaking, very much on that side of what Spain had a huge influence on me at the beginning of my wine career.
Amazing. I didn't know that part of your history, but I want to get back to the football. What position did you play?
Wide receiver.
Really?
No.
Fantastic.
Line.
Line,
was,
okay.
I was line, for sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's a big achievement to get to college on, you know, playing football. And and then to our benefit, now you went into the wine industry instead. So,
Yeah, okay. I was just a big teddy bear on that team. I needed to.
That so much.
All right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about Spain then. So you do that, and then you learn about oxidative winemaking, and then you come back, and what happens next?
And then I come back, and I kind of am on that path of I'm going to now commit back to this full time. And one of the things that came up was, this was in 99, and I kind of was starting to enroll in programs. And I met a gentleman who introduced me to Rod Berglund at Joseph Swan. And Rod was looking for somebody to work with him and brought me in as very quickly, the title assistant winemaker. By no means did I deserve that title, but I was working with
Rod. Were you assistant Rodfather? Is that like a better title?
Yeah, maybe.
He's so famously known as,
that's
right?
Wonderful. A lot of ties to University of Washington, the dog father as well. But I started there and kind of was working there, and I enrolled at UC Davis. And then I had two UC Davis winemakers come by and said, listen, we'd like you, if you could, go to Fresno. And that was very interesting to me. And the fact that they said, we need less people telling us how to make wine and more people that know how to make wine.
Very fair, yes.
And I was very much more so of that cloth, if you will, in the hands-on, wanting to be dirty versus the lab coat side, if you will.
Completely.
Not a fair analogy, maybe, but that's what it was at the time. And so I went to Fresno State and then would come back and work with Rod. And then at Fresno State was getting my degree, and I really focused. I was into biodynamics because of living with family in Switzerland when I was in 98 after Spain, was introduced to biodynamics, and very much got into biodynamic wine, pushed that path. And then it was was something where I was there, I was very much into Whole Cluster, and I wound up writing Jeremy and Jacques Says, or Jacques Says at the time,
nice.
About doing something with Whole Cluster back in the U.S. Could he help me? And that spurred more conversations, and then ultimately they said, oh, would you like to come join us for the 04 Harvest?
And that would be a yes.
And that would be a yes. And then went and worked with Jacques. And Jeremy, that was his first year touching whites. He wasn't allowed to touch reds yet. So I was doing everything with Jacques. And I was there for Whole Cluster.
Okay, 100%. So give a little bit of a background. Like, who are these people? Yeah. And tell us, you know.
So Domaine Dujac, one of the most coveted Pinot Noir, Burgundy producers in Moret-Saint-Denis, Burgundy. And Jacques Says started this project in the 60s, if you will, and started this simple, wonderful family estate, which has become one of the most coveted wines and expensive wines in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And now Jeremy Says, his son, and Patrick and Diana Says from over here are at the helm running the mm-hmm. property. And so that was an opportunity for me with the family to live with them and be with them. And I went early to work in the vineyard and then harvest and then stayed late into almost Christmas time before. And they were fortunate. They introduced me to a lot of people around the Rhone and Champagne and in Burgundy that I went around with them to meet at the same time. So introduction to fabulous producers.
Incredible.
Because of them.
Yeah. Was Diana already there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Diana was there. They weren't married at the time, but Diana was over there.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So Jeremy Says, the son, married a woman named Diana Snowden, whose family are the Snowdens of Napa. So she was a Napa winery and vineyard second generation, I suppose. And so she still does some consulting out of some of the wineries. I don't know if she still does. She was still consulting a little bit in Napa once in a while. So, yeah.
It's funny enough, on that same token, aside from what we're discussing today, I'm actually collaborating with Jeremy on a Napa Cabernet project as well. So full circle back to the day of working with the
Incredible.
Says family. Yeah, it's,
So just also for a point of clarification, I mean, you mentioned Whole Cluster. What does that mean to a lay person?
Yeah. So Whole Cluster, basically Whole Cluster in its essence is when all of the stems and grapes are going into tank. There's a lot of producers that are doing percentages of that. So maybe the grapes are harvested and 80% of the pick that comes in, 80% of those grapes go in Whole Cluster. So they don't destem, they don't knock the berries off the stem and throw the stem away into compost. They put it all into tank. And so you have a side of all of those going in, and there's facets of that we could discuss with carbonic versus Whole Cluster and the difference, but Whole Cluster stems put into the tank, and we do a lot of 100% Whole Cluster.
So oversimplification, but is it safer to say if you're interested in doing Whole Cluster, you pay a lot more attention in the vineyard?
Hopefully.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay. Well, you personally, I'm sure, do pay a lot more attention to the vineyard. So, yeah. But I would imagine it's all like of a piece. Like you've got to, everything needs to just be as good quality as possible.
For sure. And I think one of the biggest lessons throughout all of these places and all the I always say liquid mentors, the wines that inspired and the people that inspired was the fact that all of them were very much doing the farming and making the wine. And that's not necessarily a point in fact in California with winemakers.
Right.
So it's something for me that was an absolute necessity. And that's started the path when I came back and after Araujo, what I really had to push further into.
Right. Okay.
So I was just going to ask, and I know we have to take a break in a minute, but what does Whole Cluster processing, fermentation do for the wine? What does it do for the
so
end
much.
Product?
Yeah, so much.
Look at the smile. His whole face lit up.
I know,
for those that can't see it, it's like a love affair with Whole Cluster right there.
Yeah, Whole Cluster adds so many facets, but I think coming back to Virginie's comment of the simplification side of it, you're going to get fermentation dynamics. It's a side of it's going to maybe even keel, level out fermentation spikes and valleys, but also that side of on a complexity note, it adds a structural component that's completely unique. Mm-hmm. And then on a aromatic component, it starts to push into more savory, into more floral. With Pinot Noir, you'll get into the hibiscus and tea notes and nutmeg and clove and things that you don't get just from throwing in the berries, especially in California.
Okay, we have to take a quick break. We'll come right back with Matt Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
good stuff with our guest today, Matt Taylor, winemaker, Masker and Family Wines. But we were getting into Whole Cluster and all the amazing things. And you're still smiling about Whole Cluster and all the wonderful things that it can bring to a wine, particularly Pinot Noir. So, but you go, so you're in Burgundy and then you come back, or what happens next?
I wrote a letter. At the time, I knew I really needed to be back into the farming side. And I wound up writing a letter to Bart and Daphne Araujo at Araujo Isley Vineyard and told them the path I was on and what I was wanting to do. And they wound up creating a position for me to farm and be vineyard manager, farm all the vineyards with them, and then be under Francoise Pichon. At Araujo State.
Amazing.
And so that was a side of I came in, I did that. I was there for about 6.5 years, but 2005-06 was vineyard manager, assistant winemaker, and then Francois stepped back into a consulting role, and then both made the wines and did the farming 7, 8, 9, 10.
So why did you write to them?
Because I wanted to farm biodynamically, mm-hmm. and there was a side of they were starting biodynamics, but I wanted to farm at a place that was doing biodynamics at a very, very high level, mm-hmm. With wines of high status level at the time. And so there were plenty of smaller places, unique places that might have been doing biodynamics. But for me at the time, it was something where the Araujos, and part of it as well is when I was in Burgundy, Jacques, we would go down to the cellar every night and you would pick three wines and bring them up, and one of the best cellars in the world, and you were blind them to the table. And okay. so, you know, Jacques and Jeremy had the unfair advantage that they knew every single wine in their cellar and what it was.
Oh my gosh.
But you were blinding that and doing that every night. And a couple of the wines that really inspired me over there was a 72 Mayacama Cabernet Sauvignon and a 71 Ridge Isley. Mm. And so those, being inspired by Napa when you're in Burgundy was
right.
not where I thought I'd be going. But that was also a side of I wanted to be producing something at the highest level and doing biodynamics at the highest level, and hence writing them. I might have written a couple others, but the one that panned out
answered.
Was there. Yeah.
Well, to their credit, I mean, you know, you get a letter from some young man and you just never know, but I mean, to their credit. So what was the most challenging thing about farming biodynamically in Napa?
Well, one of the things that I continue to say, even with a year like this, is that farming in Napa is not that difficult. I mean, farming in California, but farming in Napa,
right?
With the amount of heat and the amount of sunshine and the amount of air, it's not the most difficult place in the world. So it's a great place as a launching pad for that. Now, if I was doing biodynamics in the Loire or even out on the coast where I've pushed them even further, it's a side of I'm dealing with other levels of mildew and cool and ripen. So it's a little different side of the spectrum, but. Napa as a whole, it was a very great place to get my feet wet.
Yes, low stakes. That's all right. I mean, well, high stakes in other ways,
high
but low stakes
in other ways,
on the farming
but
side.
Yes, and I think that we saw some amazing things right away, which was that, you know, in 2008 we had a huge heat wave that came through, all of everything that we were farming biodynamically at the time just went straight through and didn't show any wilting, weathering from those. We had, you know, I think we had 20 days over 100 degrees, and 10 of them were over 110.
That's crazy.
It was insane.
Yeah.
And so to see a vineyard go through that like it did on the biodynamic versus organic, I can look at fields and soil all day, but just seeing that was so much of an indicator of health and stability and balance that was in that it set the path even further.
So when do you, let's get you back to Sonoma County. When do you come back to Sonoma County?
So after Araujo, I came back and I started Front Porch Farm up in Healdsburg. And I really, again, so Steve Mathiasson was somebody I brought onto Araujo in 2005. And he and I gelled. But I also saw that side of what Steve had, which was a huge agriculture base of knowledge before he got into viticulture. And I had a big viticulture base, but not an agricultural base. So I went and started Front Porch Farm. We had biodynamic organic row crops, orchard, animals, vines, everything that we were doing, as well as the ruling project. And so I was doing those side by side in Sonoma County. And then I went and started a little vineyard out on the coast, and started planting that on a purely ideological side of things, which was going to be what it is, organic, biodynamic, regenerative, dry farmed, out on the ocean.
Okay.
And so that had me back in Sonoma County and then really pushing out where my family was at in Occidental. My parents were married in Occidental. We have a long history there. And so I was back in Occidental and out on the coast and doing farming and back in Sonoma County.
Well, Carissa's happy to hear that.
I'm very happy to hear that. And I'm spying some wine over there,
I know.
I'm sort of curious about as well.
Yeah. So tell us what you brought and kind of what, I mean, I introduced you
to
the winemaker.
And also open what you brought, to be clear. Open what you brought.
Open what you brought and hand it to Carissa immediately. And then tell us about Mascarene Family Wines and sort of how that has become
I'm going to open
career.
The Chardonnay 2022.
Oh, yes.
Dahlia
Always
Vineyard,
a great sound. You
Dahlia
never get
Vineyard
tired.
Dahlia Vineyard Chardonnay. And this is something that is... So what happened was I was in Sonoma County and Aaron Jordan was making the project for the Mascarene family. And Aaron and I go way back, really good friends. And what happened was is that they had purchased a tasting room in Healdsburg. And they wanted to bring the whole operation over to Sonoma County. And Aaron's based, as you know now, over in Calistoga, St. Helena area. And he wasn't wanting to come back. And he called me and said, hey, I have this project. Would you like to take the reins? And met Ed Mascarene. And Ed and I hit it off from the start. And he asked me to come on and make the wines for this family. And I've been doing that since 2016. Very small production. As you can see here, we're going to do a Chardonnay today and something unique and new. But this is a vineyard here of Chardonnay that is a vineyard that I started when I was at Ruling. This was a vineyard across the street, a wonderful vineyard that I helped a gentleman farm since 2010 and was helping him farm it. Never made the fruit or had it. Mm-hmm. And then he wound up selling the property. And then when he sold, it was something where the new owner asked if I'd come in and continue the farming. And then would we like to purchase some of the grapes? And we said, well, we'd like to, but we want to take the whole vineyard. And so it's a 2.5 acre piece that we farm organically right there in near Sebastopol off 116 on the, a Sonoma coast. Mm-hmm. And it's a vineyard that, again, I think Chardonnay-wise, you're going to see how this is very unique to the majority of Chardonnays produced in California. My vein is going to be much more pushing an almost Jura side of Chardonnay, a more oxidative side of it, or where it pushes, very textural, but because of where it's grown, ripping acidity and where that holds. But you're going to see a lingering in these wines. These wines love oxygen. They will sit for, 4, 5, 6, 7 days if you keep just tasting them day after day. They love that, and they open up and go further and further, and they're not reductively made in that vein where it's just one shot of aromatics and then they just die on the counter by the evening.
Yeah, but we don't want any dying
on the counter.
No,
I would like sipping on the counter. I'm totally okay with that.
Is this a liquid mentor for you?
It is a liquid mentor.
Liquid mentor, liquid joy.
Give it a lot of air.
Yeah, give it a lot of air.
I've been swirling.
And is that, would you say, for people who are interested in trying oxidative wines or don't really understand what that means, is sort of letting it open part of the trick to enjoying
it? For sure. I mean, especially with the way that these are made, this is something that we're just jumping into even pouring this in the tasting room as a 22, and most people will be maybe on 23 and jumping into 24 soon.
Yeah.
Because of how these are made and with the amount of lees that are on them, they really take time to open. And so for me, this wine, we're going to double decant this before we're pouring this in a tasting room. We popped it for you guys straight from bottle, but ideally we would have double decanted this today. And right now, probably the 20 is the vintage, maybe the 21 that are just starting to be in the right lights.
Yeah, I think you could tell that Carissa didn't want to wait.
Yeah.
That
takes a lot of patience. Yeah. I'm just going to be honest.
No, it does, but it's good for consumers to understand that. Just because, sometimes you are poured a wine maybe too soon or in a restaurant setting and you don't realize, give it a little bit of time, swirl it a little bit
more. Well, when they're experiencing it not on the radio show, it's being double decanted for their enjoyment.
Yes,
so
that is,
the tasting room.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
So I'm only impatient because I'm here.
Yeah. Yes, and you couldn't wait any longer.
Yes.
We have to, unfortunately, take another quick break. We will come right back on with Matt Taylor from Mascarene Family Wines. back on The Good Stuff with Matt Taylor, winemaker, Massacre and Family Wines. And so we were enjoying the Chardonnay, but there's also a red you might want to tell us a little something about.
Yes, I'm going to...
And pour.
Of course.
Oh, there it is.
It didn't pop as well. So we're going to be pouring a little red wine, which is a Syrah-based wine. And this interesting story with this is that the family, the tasting room is up in Healdsburg, just off Dry Creek exit. And it's something where there was a Syrah vineyard planted there, and it was planted with a long-term contract with a family place in North Carolina. And so we basically... the Aaron Jordan had made a Syrah for them, one vintage from the vineyard, and it was nice, but I had no desire to make Syrah from this vineyard. It just had everything that was not exciting to me about Syrah. I love cool climate Syrah,
yes.
And this was something that was kind of not all of those things. But what happened was that Ed and Mia were phenomenally supportive and backed me in. I started in around 2016 going back to the Loire Valley with Pascaline LePeltier. And we started visiting producers, and then I wound up speaking with all of these producers and bringing back Budwood from the Loire back to the U.S. And they were kind of huge supporters in getting that all started. So much, in fact, that they took out a portion of their vineyard and we put in rootstock to allow me a mother block to put all of these varieties and start them up and get the budwood. And that mother block started to come into production. And it was one of those where this kind of constant horn of, will you produce Syrah from here? Will you produce Syrah from here? And I'm not excited, no. turned into, well, I'll tell you what, if we're going to do that, I have this kind of idea. Let's just kind of try this 1 year, give it a chance. And what we did is we harvested all the whites and all the reds of the Loire varietal mother block, and we put them in a tank, whole cluster with the Syrah, and co-fermented them all together.
Oh, wow.
And so you had Chenin Blanc, Sauvignon Blanc, Remorantin, Menu Pinot, Grolo, Gamay, Cabernet Franc, Pinot Donnie, and all of these are in this wine. So this vintage here, 23, is about 25% Loire varietal, 75% Syrah. And it's funny, as it warms up and sits on the counter later on, Syrah comes through. But initially up front, you get a lot of Loire aromatics.
That's
and
cool.
So it's a very, very
really
unique
cool.
wine. It's incredibly delicious. Something that we wanted to just be that kind of red field blend, if you will.
Yeah.
That is just delicious and fun. And it's turned into just that. I love this wine. But it goes back to Ed and Mia's support in everything on this project and what's been being done. And then, you know, now Joy at the tasting room. It is just something that a beautiful family operation up there in Healdsburg.
So the Mascarins themselves have longstanding roots in the area. Is that correct?
Yeah. Ed has. And Ed was born and raised down in the Central Valley, and his family worked for Martini. And Ed's basically family was in the grape trade. Ed was working in vineyards as a child. He escaped it and went to Cal Berkeley, you know, football and baseball scholarship, and did both, and wound up becoming an engineer. But it always was this side of family coming back to that Visalia area, back into Central Valley all the time, and ultimately getting back into the wine game, if you will, and his childhood roots.
So people can come taste. You mentioned the tasting room. So what's the experience like? What other wines can they try?
Yeah, so Mascarin 32 Wins tasting room is just off Dry Creek exit in Healdsburg, by appointment only, and a wonderful setup out there. I always call it one of the hidden gems of our wine country. Mm-hmm. It really is. It sits back on Dry Creek. It's completely hidden, and you would never know it exists back there. And it's just one of the best places to camp and picnic for the entire day if you can. Maybe not for
come for a glass of wine, stay for the day.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Let the wines open.
Those two wines, and then they're also doing a small kind of a setup with a pouring and serving Matt Taylor wines.
Wait, who says Matt Taylor? What wines? What is that all about?
Yeah, not somebody that we want to talk about.
Some other wines that are very delicious and everybody should try, and they might be able to at the tasting room, it sounds like.
For sure, it's a wonderful spot. And again, a family operation, all Sonoma County-based wines and Sonoma Coast-based wines, and something that we're really, really, really proud of, and how these wines are made and what they're done. And you're going to be getting wines that are farmed organically, done the right way, and produced the right way. that way.
How many wines do you make usually?
So under the Mascarene label, we'll usually are producing around, let's say, around 6 wines. And then we're just producing a Chardon Pinot from Matt Taylor Wines out on the coast. Mm-hmm. And then future is I have a whole Loire varietal project out on the Sonoma coast that some of those will be in the tasting room. Wow. Chenin, Sauv Blanc, and then eventually Gamay and Pinot Denis.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So there's so much to explore.
I know. We're going to have you back on and talk about the Loire.
Let's do it.
Yeah. The Loire variety wines.
That's a whole other portfolio.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely.
So much fun.
Okay. Well, we encourage everybody to go to the tasting room by appointment Thursday through Tuesday. Info at 32windswine.com on Dry Creek Road. What else do we need to know? I think we just need to thank you so much for coming on and
thank
telling
you
us
guys
your story.
For having me.
Great story, great wines.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, loved having you on.
Come taste.
We will.
Yeah, everybody.
Well, I'm going to be drinking the Chardonnay all day, so
and the red.
Just let
and
that
red.
Open up. And now the red. Yeah. And now the red blend.
But. Yeah, fantastic. All right. Yeah.
Thanks, you guys.
So are you still drinking the Chardonnay or the Field Blend?
I'm doing the Field Blend.
Mm, it's so good.
But I'm going to revisit the Chardonnay because you know how much I love Chardonnays. And I think watching that evolve all day will be kind of cool.
All day.
All day. Chardonnay all day.
And into Tuesday, maybe.
And maybe into Tuesday.
Maybe into Tuesday. Now, I do encourage people to go, you know, check out Mascarene Family Wines. Certainly try some of the Matt Taylor wines. He's just... very, you know, just a great winemaker, very focused on the fruit and the vineyards. And
And also, I just didn't realize how much experience he had, sort of, as he said, liquid mentors, mm-hmm. but being mentored or just being engaged with, learning from, learning alongside.
Yeah.
Literally some of these greats around the world, not just here in California, which is really cool.
It is really cool.
Yeah.
He's got great experience. So and it sounds like a magical place to visit too. So maybe I might just have to leave
picnic,
early.
We could camp, we could hang out all day. That's what I heard.
Yeah. So we need to wrap this up so we can do all those things with the Chardonnay that we're just going to have open over time. Again, I think it is, well, we've got 32windswine.com, but then we also have the website is mascarinewines.com. That's MASCARIN. I think there's a little hyphen in wines.com.
Yep.
Just ask Google.
Yeah. There you go. Isn't that what we do all day now?
It is. And then the answer comes back in AI. So it's not even really Google anymore.
I know it's not even. Yeah. It's AI powered by Google or
right. So go
moderated.
Look it up and then and then go and sit in a lovely vineyard and forget about AI.
Yeah. And follow along
for a bit.
And follow along on their Instagram at 32windswine as well.
Yeah. Great. And we will have him on again to talk about Sonoma Coast and coastal viticulture. I mean, given his upbringing too, it's so interesting. Like he's so drawn to the coast.
Yeah. Having, you know. Yeah.
And is not afraid of birds.
Not afraid of birds. I was going to ask him, do you have any pets? But I didn't know what we were going to get.
You were going to ask, do you have any pets?
No, I mean, I don't know. It's like a pet bird hanging out.
Oh, my God. You go from
birds.
Like the bird, Alfred Hitchcock, the birds, to do you have any pets?
I mean, if I were him, I'd have a bird and I'd name it Hitchcock or Alfred just for fun.
Creepy.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think I would do that at all.
No, all right.
At all. But what are you drinking? So what are you drinking on Tuesday?
Because I actually haven't tried it, so I'm going to pick up a bottle and have it on Tuesday. But since we had Matt in here, I want to try one of his wines. So it's the Matt Taylor Pinot Noir. It's the 2020. It looks like it's the current vintage for Cuvée Kayla, which you said is named after his wife.
So I believe that's true.
And it's a West Sonoma Coast Pinot Noir. So again, talking about the coastal influence, very excited to try that. So that is what I'm going to be drinking on Tuesday.
Very whole cluster, very much one of those wines that you do want to let open as well. So,
and you? What's your Tuesday night?
I'm going back to the Mascarene, the Field Blend, this Red Field Blend 2023 Angelo Vineyard, which I don't know if Matt mentioned the name, estate-grown Dry Creek Valley. I just love that it has all these different things that go into it.
I know, all the 75% Syrah and 25% like 10 other things.
All co-fermented together. So
those are always fun when you actually do the co-fermenting versus sort of the blending at the end. What a different sort of product you get. Beautiful.
And I'm sure he's doing a whole bunch of whole cluster.
I agree. And Jeff, our producer, finds that really funny, and I'm not sure why that's so funny.
I don't know why either.
But yeah.
He finds a lot of things funny.
That's true.
That we don't understand.
Well, I would say go visit the winery Thursday through Tuesday by appointment only. You can email them at info@32windswine.com, and they're out right off of Dry Creek Road in Healdsburg. So you'll get to experience the Mascarene wines, the Matt Taylor wines, and...
Who knows what else?
Who knows what else? And have a lovely time. So,
all right.
There
you go. Sounds very nice. From Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.